Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to the Lombardi Line. I'm Michael Lombardi. Today we're joined by Will Hill, filling in for Dave Ross, who's enjoying an extended vacation at Virginia Beach. Dave, we hope you're having a great time. I know you are. Probably will, because his Cowboys were able to win yesterday. So I'm sure he's right there at the betting market, betting the Cowboys to make the playoffs. He was probably, you know, as Tom Brady was talking about their playoff chances with Kevin, you know, I think they were both kind of thinking, I was saying, Dave Ross is going to go the window here. Don't you think so? Welcome, Will.
What's going on? Yeah, we have plenty to talk about. I did see that number today, 20-1 for Dallas to make it. So you're going to need a couple security guards to restrain Dave from not making that bet. Yes,
Dave. Will, that's a St. Jude's play. Just give the kid, give money to the kids. Seriously, that would be better off. Let's do something good with that money. That's a St. Jude's play. There's no way that team with Cooper Rush and what we witnessed yesterday. But we got, you know, we have bigger things to talk about today than we do Cooper Rush's lack of ability in the Dallas offense. I've never seen poorer game management in all my life until I watched the second half of the Giant Cowboy game. The 2 minutes before the second half of the Cowboy Giant game. But Matt Eberflus really has taken game management to another level. And what bothers me more than anything, Will, and we'll get into it here in a second, is what his soundbite was after the game. Let's play that, Elliot.
And then we're there at second and 20. You know, take the sack right there. And, you know, so we're at 36 seconds right there. And our hope was, because it was third going into fourth, that we would re-rack that play at 18 seconds, throw it inbounds, get into the field goal range, and then call the timeout. And that's where it was. And that was our decision-making process on that. Again, we were outside the field goal range, you know, so we needed to get a few more yards in there as close as we can get. And then we're going to call timeout. And that's why we held that last timeout. At the end of the game.
In retrospect, how should you have handled the final sequence?
Yeah, I like what we did there.
How can he like it? How can he like it? I mean, look, you know, you can just see from Chicago games, and it's pretty clear that they don't practice game management and they don't teach game management to their players, because Caleb Williams was completely unaware of it. There was no, and I'm not blaming him at all, Will, but he was completely unaware with it. And I think what he explained there is, yeah, that's a good theory, but there's a golden rule in 2 minute when you get a sack, you almost have to call a timeout. That's one of the advantages of holding on to your timeouts, is because when you get a sack, it allows you to call a timeout. And look, you can spike, you know, I know it was third down, so he couldn't spike the ball. But when you call that timeout, all you have to do is throw the ball in bounds to get your field goal team ready to run out there and run the fourth down play and kick the field goal. Like, to me, I understand you want to save the timeout to set up the field goal, but you want to at least kick the field goal. I mean, that was really bad. It was the worst I've ever seen. I don't know how today he can sit there and say it's what we wanted to do. Will?
It's 14 hours later. I'm still in shock. I had the same reaction watching the game that I think everybody did, where you look at the person next to you and say, did that really happen? Is the game really over? The players look shocked that the game was over. Even the Lions players were looking at each other like, did they really just do that? It's almost so dumb. There's nothing to even talk about other than it's like the stupidest thing you've ever seen. It would be like somebody taking a stack of $100 bills and lighting them on fire and then asking me to react. Well, what did you think of what just happened? What am I supposed to say besides that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen? We talked yesterday about the Leon Lett game and some of these Thanksgiving, like, iconic games, iconic moments. This, in a lot of ways, was the coaching version of the Leon Lett game. And this is going to go down forever as a Thanksgiving memory in terms of like the Randy Moss game, the Leon Lett game, the Phil Luckett coin toss. You talked about the Longley game with the Redskins and the Cowboys. This is going to live forever. This is an all-time gaffe. I can compare it to – the only thing I can compare it to – remember J.R. Smith in the NBA Finals thought they were up by one and he dribbled out the clock and nobody called timeout, but they were tied. They went to overtime and lost. This is just inexcusable. And I do put some of it on Caleb Williams because his quotes after the game were just as bad. Said, you guys are playing the results. It's easy when you have a pause button to say what we should have done. We're being aggressive. Eberflus almost to me, and he was awful before this. He wasted a challenge in the first quarter that had no chance. I know Nance said, well, you can't blame Eberflus there. You can blame Eberflus. That had no chance of winning. And then Caleb Williams calls a timeout on that drive. They're on the 3-yard line. He calls a timeout to avoid a delay of game. It's going to be a 1-yard penalty, a 1.5-yard penalty. Who cares about that? The timeout is way more important. And Caleb Williams after the game saying, well, we didn't do anything wrong. You guys are just second guessing. Caleb Williams is going to be in our lives for a long time as a quarterback. Eberflus is going to get fired maybe today, maybe soon. He's just going to be a defensive coordinator. So we're not going to really have him as betters, as football fans. He's going to be off to the side. The fact that Caleb Williams doesn't know any better to call a timeout or to know that was botched at the end is just mind-boggling. Again, I'm still shocked. Part of it is a Viking fan, like, man, wanted the Lions to catch a loss. And there is more to talk about in terms of like the Lions second half, because it's funny, if you laid the points with the Lions, like, man, I should have covered. I should have been up like 31-0. I could have been up 31-0 at halftime. And if you're the Bears, you're like, man, I could have won the game, because they had chances to hit more a couple times. They had a pass called back on illegal hands to the face. But Eberflus, Caleb Williams, no accountability whatsoever after the game.
Well, but I agree with you on, and there's got to be some sense of instinctive game management. But to me, one of the things that you have to do as a head coach is teach game management to the players. Okay, here's the situation. Remember, we used to grow up playing baseball. You know, what did the baseball coach do? Okay, we got runners on first and third. The ball's hit here. What do we do, right? You know, I mean, and that was a time and an era where we all watched the entire baseball game. This is before ESPN came out with, you know, the highlights. And so kids stopped watching the whole game of baseball. You put yourself in situations. It's the same thing with football. You know, you have a 10-minute meeting every morning with your team and you go over situations, and Fridays are usually situation days. But to me, you know, this is what happens when you're trying, like, his theory was right in terms of, okay, we're going to get the ball in bounds. We want to call a timeout. But what play did they call? Like, if you're trying to throw the ball in the middle of the field, what were they doing? Like, okay, if that's your excuse, to what the reporter should have asked is, well, why did you not call a play where the ball came out of his hands quicker? What took so long to get you lined up? The golden rule is, when you get sacked, there's so many plays that come off the board. By the time the players get back and get lined up, you lose three plays. You can't afford to lose three plays. You know, now here's what he would say. Well, if we don't complete the next play, well, that makes it even more the reason. It's just hypothetically say that they threw the ball out of bounds with and saved 18 seconds on the clock. They can't kick the field goal there anyway, right? So wouldn't you be better off getting organized, having everybody come, okay, here's what we're going to do. They're going to play back. They're not going to want to give up the touchdown. They don't care about the field goal. They'll go this game into overtime. Let's make sure we complete the ball in the middle. We got our kickoff. We got our field goal team sitting, standing right here. They're going to run on the field, and we're going to get this field goal, make it, and go into overtime. I mean, that's what you do. That's why you call timeouts. Why do you think the NBA coaches have that clipboard where they're diagramming, even though the players don't pay attention to it, they're showing them what's going to happen next? I think, to me, that's really the biggest mistake. And your point about Detroit, it's one of the few times all year I've seen Detroit play with their food. You know, they had a chance to put the game away, the Gibbs fumble at the end of the first half. But to me, I think it was one of the few times they played with their food that I've seen all the time. I mean, they've got a 23-7 lead with 2:43 to go in the third quarter. And you would have think that there's no chance that Chicago's going to, because you feel like the way Detroit was moving the football, they're not going to stop them ever. Even if Chicago scores, this is going to get 30-13. They're going to do something. They're so aggressive, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think at one point in the game, it was the Lions had 250 yards and the Bears didn't have a first down. I don't think the Bears got the first down until, remember, there was that late drive with like the 2-minute warning.
Or it could have been after the
Gibbs fumble. I mean, that game was 31-0 on paper. Now they settle for field goals. Gibbs fumbles right around the 5, right around the 2, wherever it was. I mean, on paper, that's like a 31-0 game. And then all of a sudden you look up, if you're doing whatever with your family, if you're kind of half watching the game, you say, wait a second, the Bears are down 3 with the ball. What happened here?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, here's the goes. They fumbled. They didn't get their first down until the 55-second mark in the second half, right? That's what it was. They got their first down. They only ran 6 plays on that drive, and they went out on downs. But here's where the Lions start. Field goal, touchdown, field goal, and they had the fumble going in, which was the killer. And then they come back in the second half and do exactly what they thought they would do, which is score a touchdown. And then that's when the fourth – that was the only drive they had in the third quarter. That was the only drive they had. It took like 6 minutes in the third quarter. They went 11 plays and they got 5 first downs. But then their fourth quarter, you know, they missed the field goal, which was not typical for them to do. But really, I think where Campbell probably feels like he's disappointed in his team is when he got the ball back with 5:36 to go in the game and they went 3 plays and out. And it was the only 3 and out they had the entire day. And to me, that inside call, I think Ben Johnson's probably going to kick himself up and down for as much talk about Eberflus's call. That Ben Johnson call on 3rd and 2 probably was going to be the one he's going to stay up at night thinking about, because that's not typical of what they did. They ran into a brick wall. They ran the wrong play. It happens. We understand it. They're really good. But I think that's the one there. I think that was the one time. And it's probably a good thing, Will, because I think now that they've learned their lessons, okay, we're getting that situation. We're not doing that again.
Does the second half make you feel differently about the Lions? Hey, maybe they're a little more beatable than people think. Or is it, hey, this game got weird. Things happen in the NFL.
Yeah, I think it's Thanksgiving. Things got weird. No, I thought Detroit, look, I think the one thing that we said going into this game was Chicago knew they were going to give up yards. I didn't think they would give up as many on the ground as they did. They were getting 10 yards at a clip. It was ridiculous, right? And so I don't think that you know, I think to me what Chicago did a good job of was their ability to play in the red zone. I mean, I think that's where Detroit's probably kicking themselves. This game, like you said, if you laid the 9.5 for as many times as they were in the red zone, you got to believe that, hey, we should have been able to win this game just because of our red zone play. But when you're 2-for-5 in red zone efficiency, which is not typical of Detroit, that's when you get into trouble. But we're talking about red zone. We got Black Friday with Antonio Pierce going into Kansas. I cannot wait today at 3:00. I got all the alarms set in the house here. We're going to watch a masterclass in coaching by the Raiders and the Chiefs. We'll talk about it when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSEN, the sports betting network.
The NBA action is in full swing, and here's a way to get more into the action following your favorite players. Play and sip, playing Pick 6 from DraftKings, the official partner of the NBA. It's super simple to get started. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app, then select 2 or more players and choose if they'll have 4 or less of a stat, such as points, rebounds, 3-pointers, and more. New Pick 6 players can play $5 and get $50 back in Pick 6 credits. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Use code VSEN. That's VSEN for new customers to play $5. You get $50 back in Pick 6 credits. Only at DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours. Well, Will, we were not disappointed by the Miami Dolphins last night in the nightcap. Wasn't the game we hoped it would be. Wasn't a close game. But we weren't disappointed in their inability to do all the things that I wrote about on VSEN.com early in the week. The fact that they can't handle 3rd and short, 4th and short. They have no physical toughness, right? They're not able to power anybody back. Everything's a finesse game. Great stat line, like you said in the break, for Tua. But at the end of the day, Miami is what we thought they were, a fraudulent team that beats up. They're the bully. They beat up on the little kids. And when they have to play the big kids, they lose.
Yeah, and I don't even want to be too critical of them, because as a bettor, they're perfect because they're predictable. That's the best thing as a bettor. When they play the Patriots, the Raiders, they score their 30-plus points. They win, they're covered, they're nice and warm, and they take care of business. When they play a good team or when they're outdoors, they're in primetime, they go into a shell and they don't cover. So I don't want to be too hard on them, because they're a bettor's best friend. We know exactly who they are and what they're going to do. There's no tricks with them. Yeah, it's you know, quarterback stats can be very tricky, and you just look at the box score and you don't want to dismiss stats. But especially, and I don't know if it's like this for any other sport, a pitcher, like, you know how good he is based on his ERA, a hitter, you know, based on his home runs, his batting average, quarterbacks with stats, because this is a beautiful stat line from Tua. 46 attempts, only 9 incompletions, threw 2 touchdowns. They didn't throw any picks. Wow, that's a hell of a game. He didn't play well at all in this game. All of that production came when they were down 18 points. The game was at 21-3, was over. The rest of it was window dressing. It was, stat padding. There was a moment where they got a touchdown, a 2, a stop, and then they're at the 1, and you're thinking, man, especially if you're someone who had, like, the Lions early, and now you have the Packers, like, man, am I going to blow another one of these covers? But they get down to, like, not even the 1. It looked like inside the 1, almost scored on first down, and then they start throwing the ball. They took a sack. They didn't score, and the game was over from there. Again, I thought the game was over at, really, 21-3. Tua, it was all dink and dunk. It was all screens. When he tried to throw the ball down the field early, I thought he was really inaccurate. So this goes to show you that quarterback stats can be really, really misleading, because Tua played okay in the second half, but on paper, he had a great game. In reality, I didn't think he played well at all. I'm curious what you think. And look, sometimes you don't want to overthink it. It's Green Bay versus Miami in the cold. And McDaniel could say, hey, all he wants about, hey, we had our team ready for the cold. Well, he didn't have his team ready for the Packers. The Packers dominated this game.
You know, his body language and his how cold he was, I can't imagine that the players looked at him and thought, boy, there's inspiration here. You know, he's really rugged. He can handle it. You know, he's Brills. You know, he's out there in the wilderness. He's able to do it. I think to me that was a little bit. But let's go back. I mean, to his first half, he's 14 for 19 in the first half. He's got 118 yards in 19 attempts, right? He was sacked twice. They had 7 rushing attempts for 14 yards. Tua had 2 carries for 6 yards. Like, they were 1 for 6 on third down in the first half. Like, if you're going to win in Lambeau, it ain't going to be coming from behind. You're going to win in Lambeau, you're going to have to be able to play from in front, get the crowd out of the game. I mean, the Packers had 100 yards rushing in the first half. They had 16 carries for 102 yards in the first half. So, like, I don't think, to me, like, as you said, and then they come back in the second half and they go 3 and out. I mean, I thought we would have a game when they start the second half with the ball. I thought we would have a game. Okay, here we go. You know, they're going to come down. They're going to drive it. But look, everything Miami does, and I know fans can't figure this out because they don't really understand the depth of the game, but everything that Miami does is to protect their offensive line. They know they can't block anybody. And so everything, it's screens, it's flats, it's quick throws. I mean, when you think about it, Tua's biggest pass play of the day was 30 yards. Now, we're used to seeing this offense throw it down the field, but he can't hold the ball that long. He's going to get hit. Plus, they're scared to death he's going to get a concussion. When he got sacked twice in the first half, they were holding their breath. You were holding your breath, Will. So I think, to me, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game we expected. It's really, we got the game we expected.
Yeah, I think that's right. Let's talk about Green Bay for a second here. How good do we think Green Bay is?
I don't put them on the level with Detroit. I think it goes back to the question I've talked about with other people. If somebody's going to break up a Detroit-Philly NFC title game, who is it? Is it them? Is it Minnesota? I think they're right in that conversation. I'd put them. I think they're right on par with Minnesota. I think they're just as good as them.
All right, so let's talk. Let's shift back to Miami. They host the Jets at home next week. All right, so you got to feel like that's it. Then they go to Houston, which will be a hard game, and then they host San Francisco right around before Christmas. Which, based on San Francisco's injury report, and we're going to get into this Buffalo game, which has got severe weather for it. I think the over total is going to come down. Just alert to people that it's snow in Buffalo this weekend. They're predicting lake effects, so God only knows. And then they end the season on the road in Cleveland and at the Jets. So, you know, I got to believe you think they could win 4 of the next 5, right? That makes them 9-8.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I mean, you're going to have to win. I know Cleveland's not a good team, but the Jets aren't a good team. But at Cleveland outdoors late January, at the Jets late January, and then another game at the Texans versus the 49ers, I think it's asking a lot. Is it impossible? No, but I think they needed the game last night. I don't think they're making the playoffs. I looked at their number to make it today, plus 350. I would need much more than that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think you have to. They got 3 home game, 3 road games, 2 home games. Both of them, they can win the home games, you know. But I think Cleveland, even though everybody did they flex that Cleveland Sunday night game out yet? Have they flexed that?
Oh, they will. They will. They don't have to decide yet, but I think I forget the rules, and I should know this as the schedule maker. This will be flexed out.
Yeah. And I mean, look, let's go back to Green Bay. I know we're bouncing around here, but Green Bay, I thought, you know, I agree with you. Green Bay's got Detroit and Seattle on the road. I mean, that's going to be a hard game going into Detroit. But Detroit's secondary right now, they've got 10 days to get healed up. They're going to need to have that against this Green Bay team with their skill players. They didn't have Romeo Doubs, but they were able to function really well. I think, to me, that presents a problem. But I think, to me, Detroit will move the ball on Green Bay. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, I think, to me, they'll be able to move the football on them because that's just kind of, you know, their style. I mean, look, when they played the last time they played, they lost 24-14, but Detroit only had 261 yards of offense in that game, and that was at home. So, you know, anyone's up for that one. The middle game in between what we saw yesterday was also fascinating because did you think the Giants could be this bad?
They at least, it's funny, the low bar now for the Giants, they at least played hard. They at least, we can't sit here and say, hey, they quit, they tanked. But they couldn't block, they couldn't tackle. Locke got hit a million times. And I thought just in general with all these games, a lot of flags, a lot of injury stoppages. The game were a little choppy where every time you look up, somebody's throwing a flag, somebody's hurt. Not that the calls were wrong. I just thought there wasn't a lot of flow to these games. And I know you have a lot to say because I sat there watching it thinking of you. Neither of these teams seem to understand the concept of the two-minute warning, halftime, going into the half with, like, last possession. Both teams were hell-bent on letting the other team have another chance before the half. It was really bad.
It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. I mean, there's Brian Daboll, who worked for the Patriots, you know, and was schooled on game management and at the end of the half and how you have to stick a run in there and how you have to get the clock going and so that you could do it. And his and he starts calling plays just like he's an offensive coordinator without any supervision whatsoever. It was embarrassing, you know, and this offense is beyond embarrassing. I know they scored 20 points, which is only the fourth time all year they've scored over 20. But the other times they've scored over 20, they've won the game. They scored 22 against the Commanders and lost, but they scored 20 here. But I thought Locke was terrible. They can't block anybody. For all the conversation we heard this offseason about, you know, Joe Shane said, we've got to make them better in the offensive line. I mean, I don't know how you play Evan Neal. I think Drew Locke needs a Purple Heart today because the whole game was like that. Would you want to play behind that line?
I might have a hamstring injury. I might not be able to go. I would not want to play behind that line. I will say that the guy for the Cowboys that had the pick six over Sean, he looks like a good player. Talk to me from a scout's perspective. What is Thibodeau? Because he was a high pick. You didn't hear a lot from him yesterday other than I think he got a roughing the passer. Is he a bust?
You know, I don't think he's quite a bust, but I'm not sure he's the same level. It's the same thing with Brian Burns. They're good players. I mean, I think Brian Burns is a good player. He'll rush well against Tyrann Steele, but is he a great player? I don't think that's the case. I don't think he's a guy you set your protection to and say, oh, my God, if we don't block this guy, we're going to get killed. Same thing with Thibodeau. I mean, you know, his first-round picks are a disaster. John Michael Schmidt, they don't give him any crap for the center who he picked in the second round, but that is horrible. You watched him get beat inside. It was really bad. I think, to me, this whole drafting by Shane, now he's got great PR out there on the street, but I think it's really, really less than – this team has gotten worse since he's taken over. When we come back, I promise, we are going to deep dive into the Raider game today against the Kansas City Chiefs. 13.5 is the line. You take it at will or not? We'll talk about it when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready to elevate your tailgate game? You have to try Sewell's Barbecue. Born from a backyard cookout and a mason jar of unforgettable flavors, Sewell's has become the Southern favorite, lighting up taste buds from Georgia to the Carolinas. From wings to ribs to backyard burgers, Sewell's takes every bite to the next level. You can order Sewell's Barbecue Sauce at Sewell's, SewellsBBQSauce.com. Please try it. It is unbelievable. Will, have you had it yet?
No, I wonder if we get a little comp. Somebody going to send us some bottles so we can try it out.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I'm a big barbecue guy, and this is outstanding. But we've got other things to worry about here besides eating. I'm still full from yesterday. All right, we got Thomas Gable from the Borgata joining us here on the show. TG, welcome. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And please enlighten us with all your Giant fans that were in your shop yesterday watching that game and holding that 3.5 ticket.
Yes, well, happy Thanksgiving to both you and Will there. And let me tell you, it's never good when the best quarterback in the stadium is in the announce booth for a game, and you're forced to watch the other guys who are actually on the field, because that's a game where if you bet it, God bless, just bet it and go eat with your family. Go, get away from the TV for a while and enjoy family time, and then come back for the nightcap with the Packers and Dolphins. But, I mean, listen, overall, with the three games yesterday, you had three favorites winning outright, two of which covered with the Packers and the Cowboys. So wasn't a great day for us. The Lions not covering kind of saved it from being really bad. But obviously all those people who liked to bet the money line parlays on the favorites, all that came home. And but, I mean, listen, between the Eberflus, whatever you want to call it, the terrible clock management at the end of the first game there, to just the bad football between the Giants and the Cowboys. I mean, so many penalties. It was a very tough watch. And then you get to see Tua going into cold weather again, and once again coming up short in Green Bay. So, I mean, listen, I don't know how much we really learned from yesterday, other than the Eberflus probably is going to be out of the job this week. Probably should have been out of the job prior to yesterday. And the Packers, I don't really know what you could take away from Green Bay there. They're one of those teams that you can say maybe have an outside chance there to win the NFC. I still think it's going to be an uphill battle against Detroit or Philadelphia with them. They're definitely going to be dogs to both if they meet them in the playoffs. But I think if you're looking for another team in the NFC outside of the two favorites in Detroit and Philly, you know, it's, you're going to have to take a look at Green Bay, possibly Minnesota there. But I still think it's going to be a two-horse race, though, between Detroit and Philly, unless they both stub their toes.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. I mean, to me, Detroit and Philly, as I wrote about this morning for a column I'm doing on VSiN.com later today, Detroit and Philly's numbers continuing to keep getting better, and where the rest of the league, I'm not quite so sure. Minnesota, certainly they can keep up. I mean, they went into Green Bay and won convincingly. They got the big lead, and then Green Bay made the comeback, but I don't know if there's another team that can really match it. It's not coming from the West, because San Francisco's beat up, and with all their injuries, and this week they go into Buffalo, which I want to hit you on before we go to today's action with Kansas City and the Raiders. Weather in Buffalo, severe snow. They're talking about lake effect. What have you done to adjust this game, or has anybody hit this game hard on the over under totals?
Now, the total's dropped a point and a half from where we opened. We opened at 46. It's down to 44.5. And like you said, I think once that weather information becomes a little bit more secure, then you're going to start to see that total come down a bit. It mostly been Buffalo money. We opened 6.5, and it's up to 7. And it's been, again, mostly Buffalo money. And everybody remembers what they've seen of the Niners as of late. So not surprising that Buffalo is taking the majority of the money there in that one. But yeah, I definitely think once you start to see this forecast become a little bit more firm with this, you're going to see this total come down.
Thomas, I know how people bet. They like to parlay all the money lines on the favorite money lines. Those are all going into today, because the home team's won. I'm sure you're going to be rooting probably for the Raiders to somehow do the unthinkable and win. What's the action looking like for today, and what's your handicap on the Chiefs laying 13 here?
No, you're absolutely right, Will. If you just did the money line parlay yesterday with the three favorites, you got there. And if you included the Chiefs, well, you're still riding today. And I mean, we're still Chiefs 13. It has dipped to 12.5, but back to 13. And I mean, listen, if you laid the points with the Chiefs last week, you were lucky. You were unlucky because you certainly lost that ticket, but Chiefs were lucky to even walk away with a win there against Carolina. So I just wonder about the betting public if, you know, they remember that and say, listen, they couldn't even cover against the Panthers last week. What are they going to do here against the Raiders? Yes, now they're home at Arrowhead at least. But the Raiders, again, I mean, this is them and Carolina are pretty much the worst two teams in the league by power ratings. And I guess you could throw in New England there as the third. But so the Chiefs have kind of gotten a nice little break here in the schedule. But, I mean, to be able to cover this number 13, you'd think, all right, yeah, they should be able to cover two touchdowns. But I don't know. It's just with the Chiefs, you never know. And they just seem to never cover these big numbers against poor teams. So I do expect to get some Las Vegas money here. I do think some people are going to say, hey, the Raiders are – give me 13 with the Raiders. But, yeah, I mean, listen, you still have a lot of parlay liability on the money line, which, I mean, listen, the money line is super expensive on the Chiefs when you're laying 13 points, you know, to lay $7.50 on the money line. But it's still in there. It's still part of our liability from the parlays from yesterday, as you've mentioned. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it's I do expect to get some Las Vegas money, though, on the spread here in this one.
All right, the big game of the week, Philadelphia traveling down 95 to play the Baltimore Ravens. Lamar's 25, and you know, he's got this incredible one-loss record, 25. I got it right in front of me here. He's 26-6 counting last week, TG, when he's a three-point favorite or an underdog in games. So we're starting to see a little bit of movement on this line. It's coming down to 2.5. It is at 3 in some places. Where are you in this game? I'm sure you're still getting a ton of Eagle money.
Surprisingly, this is pretty evenly bet here, Michael, at the present. We're sitting Ravens laying 3. So, yeah, I mean, we certainly are getting people who are taking the 3 with Philadelphia. But the other thing to keep in mind with Lamar, the NFC has not been very successful against Lamar. I mean, it's tough when you only see him once in a while and to defend him, because there really isn't anybody in the NFC that you see on a regular basis who plays like him, who is of that level. So, you know, listen, Derrick Henry has had an incredible year. Obviously him and Barkley are the two rushing leaders. They get the face off here in this one, but I think Lamar is definitely the X factor. And I think it's also going to come down to that Philly defense. You know, we talked throughout the year here about how good the secondary has been for Philadelphia and how that has really been the driving force and the catalyst for the fact that last year with that nosedive that they took, the secondary was terrible. This year, it's the complete opposite with the personnel change that they brought in. But now this is going to be about stopping the run. And can they contain Lamar? Can they keep him in the pocket? Easier said than done when you don't play anybody like that throughout the rest of the season. So I give Baltimore the edge here, certainly. And, you know, it's again, it's just Lamar against the NFC. And we've seen it time and time again play out. The NFC does not do well defending Lamar.
Thomas, last minute or so, big college card today, tomorrow. What's the college game you're most interested in here the next 2 days?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Black Friday, it presents a great opportunity for sports books. It's an underrated betting day with the big college slate happening today. You got Colorado playing today, obviously a big favorite there against Oklahoma State. Colorado obviously has been a very popular play for bettors. And then Iowa, Nebraska is going to probably be a pretty good one, along with Colorado State. Utah State tonight is actually, believe it or not, for whatever reason, that is the most bet game of the day for us. Wow. In terms of handle so far. You wouldn't have picked that one out on the bingo card, but that's the most handle on it.
Well, Thomas, we appreciate you being here. Good luck this weekend with all the games. I'm sure you're going to have a pack house over there at the Borgata. We appreciate you being here. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. When we come back, we're going to do a deep dive on that Eagle-Raven game that Thomas talked about, where he's got 50% split on both teams. And then we're also going to talk about the Steelers-Bengals. Mike Tomlin is a dog
You know everybody's going to run to the window on that one. We'll be back here on the Lombardi Line next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with Smarter Insights, with expert breakdowns of this week's biggest matchups to deep dives into betting strategies and trends. VSiN delivers the kind of actionable content that gives you the betting edge. Right now, you can check out articles like Greg Peterson's College Best Bets, Zachary Cohen's Raiders versus the Chiefs preview, today's edition of the great Bill Ady's VSiN newsletter, which is always great to read. And later today, you can check out Tyler Shoemaker's Michigan versus Ohio State mega preview, Zachary Cohen's Best Bets in the NBA, and Adam Burke's Week 13 NFL player props. Right now, you can get access to everything we do, including these exclusive articles, for only $60 until May 1st with our Black Friday special. The offer will expire on Monday, so head over to vsin.com/subscribe. That's VSIN/subscribe today. Enjoy all the VSiN stuff right at your fingertips. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. I'm joined by Will Hill, and I want to talk a little bit about this Raider-Chief game, Will. And one of the quotes that's been circulating around the internet on Twitter has been what the wonderful Antonio Pierce had to say. Elliot, why don't you roll this tape as Antonio Pierce breaks down this matchup for us?
Yeah, it's called spade to spade, right? The best team in football against the worst team in football. Let's change the narrative, right? Let's go out there and make it a dogfight. Let's make it ugly. Let's make it scrappy. It's Black Friday. Let's create a little chaos. Let's get back to, Raider football and have some fun and some personality. Let it loose.
What is Raider football? They've made the playoffs twice since 2002 when they went to the Super Bowl. What is Raider football? I'm waiting to find that out. I worked at the Raider. What is Raider football? Commitment to excellence, right? I mean, he just called his team the worst team in football. I don't even understand. What is his motivating factor in this thing? What is he trying to accomplish here?
Trying to get his team, I guess, to play the underdog role, have the underdog mindset. And yeah, it's funny. The last playoff win was when you were there. You guys beat the Titans in the AFC title game. And that was it. Imagine if I told you right then when you guys beat the Titans and you beat, what was it, Steve McNair for the Titans. Like, hey, we will be sitting here 20-something years later and they still will not have another playoff win. You said, well, I would have liked to win the Super Bowl after this game. But it's just, it's incredible. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this game because I don't want to bet against Mahomes with an axe to grind because everything that happened with the Raiders last year and Pierce, again, giving a colorful quote saying we have the formula basically to beat the Chiefs, or we gave out the secret to the league to how to beat the Chiefs, or whatever the quote was. Mahomes motivated at home. I don't want to bet against that, but if I had to take it or lay it, I'd probably take it because I haven't loved the way the Chiefs have played. I haven't liked the way they played defensively against the pass, against the run. To me, the past month, 6 weeks or so, they've been kind of a mediocre defense where last year it wasn't pretty all the time, but they had a simple formula. It was Mahomes in a really good defense, an elite defense. That it hasn't been an elite defense this year. Amenihu, it looks like he's going to be back. Pacheco is going to be back. So maybe they're getting healthier, although I think Hunt has been more than serviceable. Let me ask you, does Amenihu matter in this game? They are out not only Butker, but Schrader. They're going to have Matthew Wright kick, who's been on a bunch of teams. He kicked for the 49ers earlier this year. Keep that in mind. Does Amenihu matter? And let me ask you this. I'll just ask it plain and simple. Who's better, Minshew or O'Connell? Does this matter to the line one way or another?
Oh, I think it's this line is there's no question Minshew's better than O'Connell. I don't even think it's close, okay. Right? I don't even think it's close. O'Connell can't throw the ball. And they can't run the ball. That's the other problem. They have no ability to run the ball whatsoever. Weather's not going to be a factor. Yeah, it's going to be cold here, but it's going to be 38 degrees. Wind's going to be below 5 mph. So that'll help O'Connell because he doesn't have a great arm to begin with. But to me, the Zamir White's question, he's out with a quadricep injury. Nate Hobbs, their other corner, he's out. I think to me, Madison has been a better player for him. They've been using, since Scott Turner took over, they've been using Abdullah as really the main back because he gives them some loose plays and he can make some plays in the passing game. But I think your point, let's go back to the Chiefs. I think your point's well taken. I mean, they're 6-0 straight up when they're favored by 6 points or more, but they're 0-5-1 against the spread. I mean, we know they play with their food. We know that they have these lapses. I think You know, I don't know what the numbers are. You're better at this than I, but the first quarter, I would play the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are going to come out roaring. I think they're going to come out roaring. I think the first half, first quarter is a really good play. Whatever that line is in the first quarter, I think I would play that, Will.
How about these team totals? Raiders over under for points, 14.5. Chiefs over under for points, 27.5. Is there a bet to be made there?
I think the Chiefs go over 27.5. I think the Raiders will go over 14. The Raiders have moved the ball effectively, but you know, I don't really trust O'Connell. I mean, remember when they won that game last year, it was Zaire White made the big run in the fourth quarter to kind of seal the victory. They got two touchdowns off of fumbles and interceptions. And the Raider defense this year is not playing anywhere near the way it played last year. It really isn't. I think to me, for all the conversation about how, you know, Antonio Pierce is going to build the Raider way, well, he's destroyed the defense. I mean, they're nowhere near where they were last year. So we'll see. I mean, but you're right, Will. It's hard to play the Chiefs and lay big numbers because they just don't cover. They just don't cover. All right, a game that doesn't have a big number, and it's really our game of the week, the Baltimore Ravens hosting the Philadelphia Eagles. That will be our game of the week.
This is the Lombardi Line Game of the Week, presented by Lowe's. Here's Michael Lombardi.
Well, I mean, Will, 425, could you ask for a better team, for a better game? Ravens go on a bye week after this, which they need, which will help them. But obviously, Philadelphia watching Detroit win, they know that they can't afford to lose this game. Which team do you think needs to win more?
I'd say the Ravens, just because they're playing for a division. And if the Ravens ever fall to like the 5 or the 6 seed, now if you're the 5, you get Houston. You'd rather be at home and have a higher seed, but Houston's not the worst match in the world, assuming Houston wins the division, which who knows the way they're playing. But if you're ever the 6 and you're Baltimore, man, that could be a trip to Buffalo in the first round. That's not what you want. So I think the Eagles are in really good shape to win the division. Ravens still fighting for the division. For that reason, I will say the Ravens. Would you agree or disagree with that?
You know, I think I have, you know, I wrote about this morning. I basically put this game in my Hall & Oates play on my column that'll be posted later today on VSiN, because I want to take the Eagles. I have them power rated higher than the Ravens. But then I look at all the Lamar numbers, like Thomas Gable talked about, you know, versus the NFC, you know, 26-6, you know, when he's a 3-point dog or less, you know. Or is he, you know, or a favorite or a dog? So I think to me, it's really hard to go against Lamar at home. And I'm interested that this number has really held firm at 3, Will. It hasn't moved. I thought there'd be, after the Eagles' performance on Monday night, I thought there would be a huge uptick of Eagle money. And even Thomas Gable at the Borgata is not getting it. So I think the Ravens are a different team playing at home. Weather's not going to be a factor in this game, I don't believe either. So, I mean, my heart says to me, my numbers say take Philadelphia, but there's this Lamar factor that you have to really be aware of and you have to take into consideration. And I think it's really important that you do, because because that line's just not moving. So for me, I took it as, look, I love watching it. You know, there's some games you want to watch, Will.
Right.
But not bet. Right. Don't you feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely. And books tend, and we're not going to get a 3.5 in this game. 3.5 would just be the wrong number. Books don't like to dance on and off the 3, because if it ever lands on 3, let's just say you're at 3 and then you go to 2.5 and people lay 2.5 and take 3. If it ever lands 3, you push on all the 3s and you have to pay out all the 2.5. So books don't like to go back and forth between the 2.5 and the 3. I know there was a Super Bowl. I think it was like a Cowboys Dolphins Super Bowl in the 70s, where it bounced between like 2.5 and 3.5 all week, and it landed right on 3. And I think that was like a lesson for bookmakers. Hey, you got to be careful moving the number off of 3. But I think it'll be a good game. I lean towards the Ravens winning, but laying 3 against Philly the way they're playing, I just think that's a lot of points. I'd like the over, though. I think we'll see a lot of fireworks from both teams, a lot of coaches being aggressive. I don't think you're going to see a lot of Tucker and Elliott. I think these teams are going to go for it. Harbaugh knows, hey, with my defense, I need to score. So, should be a fun game. I like the over here.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, you know, I think Lamar, we're going to find out in this game too. I think the Eagles secondary has been really playing much better. Slay has improved from last year. He's healthier this year. You know, I think to me, getting Mitchell from Toledo in the first round has helped. DeJean has helped. The kid from Iowa really gave him an inside presence, which I think they need. And look, this defensive line has really stayed in shape. Last year, they were so out of shape, they couldn't rush. They were tired. I think that when you just look at their body types, they're better. But I do think one of the key elements of this game. I think they're going to miss Brandon Graham. I know the guy's an older player, but he's been a force for them coming off the edge. And I think ultimately, when you get to, when you play Lamar, you better have a lot of athletic guys that can run on the field, because somebody's got to chase him down.
Yeah, and it goes back to Gable's point of him doing well against the NFC, because that unfamiliarity, it's just, it's hard to replicate that in the scout team, or you don't really see like that. I guess you see Jaden Daniels, who's somewhat like that, but man, Lamar is just so elusive. Not seeing him is a disadvantage when you, when it comes time to play him.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it'll be a challenge. I think that'll be a good game. When we come back, we are going to do a deep dive into the college football slate, which is going to be fascinating this weekend. Starting today, as Thomas Gable talked about Colorado, you know, hosting Oklahoma State. And then, of course, we've got the Nebraska-Iowa rivalry, plus Auburn-Alabama, and a ton of other games. Tim Murray, our college football expert, will be joining us at the top of the hour. Stay tuned here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN.